Welcome back to another week of the A&B Podcast. It's your boy, Young Tamarack, and the podcast is on the bubble like peroxide. I'm here with some good people because my people are never not good. Let them know what it is, Stare.
Yo, what up? It's your boy, Stare, a.k.a. the finesse fella, a.k.a. Papa Stare, a.k.a. that nigga. Straight over there by the stairs, you know, around the corner. Yeah, that guy right there. Him. Glad to be here. Glad to be back. Ready to pod. Let's do this.
Yes, sir. And like I said, we're here with some good people because our people are never not good. And this week we got Dan O'Brien, a.k.a. Dan O'BZ in the building, and I don't want to introduce Dan wrong, but we were speaking earlier and Dan is actually an athletic trainer who works with the NBA, if I'm not mistaken.
You got it, man. So I'll correct you a little bit, but not too much, but work with the Players Association. So I work with the NBA players and represent them on anything medical, anything related to medical. So that's quite the intro, though, and the nickname. I might keep that.
Yeah. Dan OB. Hey.
Obeezy.
Please keep it.
So I'm gonna shameless plug myself right now. My usually go to is like Bro Brian. That's like the Instagram handle.
Bro Brian.
Obeezy. I think Obeezy may stick. Obeezy may stick. I never heard that.
I'm telling you, man. Obeezy is a good one. It just came to me. I was like, yeah, Obeezy. This is what it's gotta be. But to start off, man, how's everybody been? Everybody been living their lives well?
Yeah, all good on my end. So I'm still in New York here, and I left for a while. I left in March, I think. I left the city in March because of the pandemic. I spent time with family. All the silver linings of the pandemic were the great times. I spent with family and friends, obviously. Definitely. Social distance and safely, but it happened. And then I left Maine and went down to Orlando, which we'll talk about a little bit on the bubble. I was there for a couple months, and I'm back in New York, getting some kind of semblance of a routine back going, and I guess we'll see what the next 2 months hold, but who knows?
Yeah, you're from Maine?
100%.
No, I'm not from Maine. I'm from New England. I'm a Boston guy, but I don't have much of an accent, unfortunately, but I spent time in Maine. It's seasonal. It's nice. You get the ski season, you get the summer on the lakes. A little bit of everything. It's nice, and no one bothers you. That's the best part.
Yeah, because I've never ever wanted to bother anybody in Maine because
for good reason.
Yeah, but I literally never hear anybody talk about Maine. Like, so it's just always whenever I hear that, because I think one of our friends Abu went to Maine, actually. It was school in Maine, which, like, again, never heard of anybody in Maine. So it's always amazing to hear. So.
You can't like accidentally drive through it. You gotta like purposely go up north
to go to Maine, right?
And that's why no one's ever like, "Oh, I stopped in Maine." It's like, no,
I stopped in Maine on my way to the water,
Canada. Yeah, Canada.
Nope, I don't know, and I don't even know if I'm ever gonna make it to Maine at this point. I just don't don't have any reason to be up there. But that's what's up, though, and I'm definitely excited to definitely get into that conversation around you being in Orlando. What about yourself, though, Alistair? How you been?
My week's been pretty good, you know. I've been reconnecting with my pops. He is in the process of buying my childhood home. So, like, yeah, that's pretty cool. Like,
oh, the one on Peach Orchard?
Peach Orchard, yeah. So,
whoa, that's what's up.
Yeah, big move. So, that's like a family project we're about to start working on. So, kind of excited about that. Meditating a bunch, you know, doing a whole bunch of my journaling, writing and stuff like that. This week, what did I consume? Damn, I seen something. I don't remember. See, without Twitter, it's not as like, oh man, did you see this? But
oh, you're not on Twitter anymore?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter right now.
It's nonsense, bro. So I feel you.
Still running up at lids. Definitely hit my personal goal. I doubled my target expectations. So bonus
people
coming.
Buying hats in a pandemic?
Bruh, if I tell you like the amount of hats, it's kind of ridiculous. I can't lie.
Okay. You know, I guess people are trying to get ready for when you can go back outside. So if you get your hat game now, you won't have to worry about it later. So, I mean,
sure. But like, it's kind of ridiculous the amount of.
And you got people that aren't getting haircuts. So I mean, maybe that's the other key. You gotta hide that hair that they're letting.
Not everyone's as lucky as you, Dan. So like, we can't just have the luscious locks.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wearing I got a hat right next to me. I always got a hat on deck in case this thing is.
I feel like you just like take a comb and it's just like one stroke and it's just like it's perfect right after that one stroke. And it's just like, all right, I'm ready to go.
Some days it cooperates, man. Sometimes it doesn't. And if it doesn't, it's a hat day. So I'm a hat guy. Have to be.
Nah. It is impressive for anyone who doesn't see this image.
And on Forex, I had a profitable week. So, like, you know, blesses up. Like last week,
So many questions about that.
I got the answers.
You said, because last week, if anybody listens to the podcast, Alistair said he didn't have a good week. He felt like it was was a lot of information that was coming at him and he wasn't really sure about it. But it's been a week now. And now you're saying that you had a profitable week since the first one.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
All right. So I'll put it to you like this.
What changed? What changed?
I guess just how crazy the market was going because of the presidential election. So like it was literally like, all right, it's up, let's say 30 points. And then it would be down from your investment spot 75. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, I can't really gauge that because it's so volatile. But this week it's a little calmer. Oh,
look at you using terms like volatile. Okay. I'm trying.
But
it's a Forex guy now.
Yeah. Don't like soon I'm about to be recruiting everybody. Hey, join my team. This week. On Tuesday, I started trading. I was 4-1 in the morning, came back in the afternoon. I was a little cocky, but I went 6-5. So ended up on a good day. Wednesday came back was, I started the morning 2-3, came back in the afternoon 10-4. So, you know, good day. Today is Thursday. Started 3-3 and then I didn't trade because I was at work. So,
Okay. No, that's what's up.
People who are listening to the podcast, add it up, you know, see what you got.
That's what's up. Because like I said, we were like super skeptical about it. So I'm actually happy to hear that you're doing well, or at least you're taking steps to doing better. As for me, my week, I feel like I don't get into too much, man. But then I go on to say that I end up doing a whole bunch of stuff. So, well, for one, working on that music video for Autumn, we put together the first draft of that. So we're still working on a couple of tweaks to get that right. Now I'm excited to introduce that to everybody because, like I was saying, we got that like 5 clone effect going on in the video, so that should be pretty cool. I finished watching The Social Dilemma on Netflix, man, and phones super dangerous. Like
I said, I told you, I'm off social media.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Back up as much as I can.
It's kind of crazy how like they like literally send ads like to you and like we're like the product and like it's. It was some real like Matrix like type shit. And I just wasn't, at first I couldn't watch it anymore. Cause I was like, nah, this is making me like way sad. Like they got my life like on a string. And I was just like, but
that's why
we all got to just find ways.
When we first talked about it, I was like, yo, it's kind of like a mirror that you're looking at yourself because they know everything about you. Yeah. They know everything that you like, everything that you don't like, everything you want to see, everything you might not want to be proud of seeing, but you still want to see it. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. See, right. Think about it.
I'm with you 100%. I think we all need to find ways to disconnect when appropriate. So,
yeah.
Other than that, you know, just hitting the gym, working out, and also it was my grandmother's birthday who had passed earlier this year, this past week. So, happy birthday, Grandma! We love you. We miss you. Just want to throw that shout out there for her. But other than that, yeah, that was my week. It was a solid one. But yeah, man. So to take it from there, Alistair, can you hold us down with the top five for this week?
Top five.
This week's top five it's not really a great top five, but it's worst sports injuries that you've seen. Does anybody want to start? Because I think I'm confident with my list this week, you know?
All right, go ahead.
I was gonna let Dan start because he was the guest, but I mean, if you want to go out there, I'm gonna be that guy.
It's okay. first one, I'm gonna say Anderson Silva shattering his fibula in a fight.
Thanks. Now I wish I won first.
That's why you gotta go out the gate.
No, you're right.
I'd say any sprinter who's pulled their hamstring running full speed and then you just lose control of your leg is a very uncomfortable feeling. Number three, I'd say Javid Best, because seeing him and get his concussion is kind of crazy because he got flipped up in the end zone. He scored, but then he was like stuck.
He was like stuck, like with his arm, like handlebar style.
Kind of crazy. I got to say, Andrew Bogut breaking his arm, went for a dunk, tried to land. He fell back, landed it on his arm, and the whole thing just popped out. Crazy. What was that, four? Last one. I had to say Gordon Hayward opening night against the Cavs. When he just, because I didn't believe it at first. I just saw him on the ground. I was, it happened so fast off the alley-oop, and I was like confused. And then,
Alex, so you'll appreciate this. I watched that live at Applebee's downtown Brooklyn, across from $5 Long Island iced tea happy hour. Can't beat that, by the way.
Definitely can't beat that.
Can't beat it.
Yeah. I watched that one there, opening night versus the Cavs. Was that five for you?
Yeah, that was five.
Yeah, that was five for
you. All right, you all right? Should I just go right into mine? Good segue.
Yeah.
All right, I had Gordon Hayward too. So Alistair took mine. I also had Anderson Silva. I thought I was being diverse. I thought I had another sport, but you grabbed that one too. Last three are all basketball. Paul George, broken leg, USA basketball, snapped. Sean Livingston with that knee when he went over the dunk.
Thank you, leg. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that shit was gross. And then, this one actually, this is football. Marshawn Lattimore. Remember the kid in college, the running back?
Oh, from South Carolina. Yeah, he was going to be a monster. He was going to be a monster. Yeah.
Yeah, that one, that one was sad because it kind of ruined his career. But that
no,
his knee went
did.
Like his knee went like four ways.
Yeah.
It was crazy. So those my five.
Ooh, okay. So my five, was it Kevin Ware and his like, I don't know if that was like his shin
or like
the bone popped out and it was actually like sticking out. That was pretty bad. A more recent one, Dak Prescott's ankle, because I'm a Cowboy fan and watching that was just, it was bad. It was pretty nasty. Alan Ray getting his eye poked out. I don't know if anybody remembers that happening.
I remember that from Villanova.
From Villanova. Yeah. And I thought that was super disgusting. And this isn't really necessarily the most disgusting, but I just feel like it was pretty impactful. Was Derrick Rose's first ACL tear. I feel like that was like, it changed basketball. Changed basketball. So I feel like that was a pretty like shattering injury. And then Alex Smith's tibia and fibula. And then the like infection afterwards as well too. His whole ordeal was just probably one of the worst like injury like cycles that you could go through. So shout out to him for playing. People will be clowning him on the internet because that's what people on the internet do, but like shout out to him because I do not know how
play. Honestly, the first game he went into season, when he got sacked, I literally cringed.
You cringe, thought, yeah, because you're just like, oh my god, you feel like you feel like he's almost a broken man, but like, nope, he rehabbed and he's ready to go. So again, shout out to him.
He's starting. He's starting this week, right?
Yeah.
So
that's crazy.
Right. It's insane, actually, to sit and think about it. But yeah, I mean, I guess enough about injuries, or we'll probably touch on a few more of them as we go on. But Dan, we have you here today. And like we said, when we first began the conversation, you're an athletic trainer, right? And based on my experience, anyone who is any sort of athletic trainer has some sort of athletic beginning, maybe not, but just based on my experience. So I guess where does your start begin? Did you start playing sports initially and then?
Yeah.
What kind of happened?
Yeah. I played everything. It was funny, like, cause I always tell this story when I talk about how I got to where I am in sports, but I have three brothers. The two of them were they were interested in like the typical, like, you know, your Lincoln Logs, playing cars, playing action figures, you know, the Avengers and all these different kinds of movies and superhero stuff. And all I ever watched was sports as a kid. I'm mixing a couple Disney Channel shows, but that was about it. So I always watched sports and to the point where, like, you know, I'd go to baseball games when I was like 3 or 4 years old and just sit there and watch. My two brothers would have to get up every 5 minutes and go get concessions or popcorn or something. So I was always just enamored with sports, with athletes. It led me to playing a bunch. I played baseball, I played soccer, I played hockey, I played tennis. I mean, pretty much everything. I at least tried it out. You know, never took anything too seriously.
Hockey.
I played Hockey was big in New England, man. New England. Oh, no, it's a big sport. It wasn't really football. It wasn't really, I didn't do football. I was more of a hockey guy and where I was from. So in soccer. So I did everything. Came time for college. You know, you're sitting there as like a 17, 18 year old. And you're like, I don't know what I want to do here. So the only thing I knew about myself was that I love sports. So I found this profession called athletic training. I had no
idea. On the first go around, it was like athletic training. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't even know what it was. I said, it sounds something to do with sports. It was either that or business. So I was choosing my school based on my major. Mm-hmm. So I was down to, I'll just keep going. I was down to either Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, or I was going to look at probably Marquette in Milwaukee. Marquette was going to be business and Duquesne was athletic training. And I decided, you know, I'm going to go get a skill. I'm going to learn something. I'm going to stick around sports. And that's kind of how I got into it. And at Duquesne, they do a great job of getting you integrated into the actual athletic training. Like, you obviously have your core classes early on, but you know, you're actually doing like fundamentals of athletic training and trying to understand what the actual field is about. So I knew from freshman year on that it was something I wanted to do. And that's kind of how I got into it. But I don't have this great love story of getting hurt and then being, you know, wanted being on the rehab side. I knew I wanted to be around sports and I wanted to be hands-on. I wanted to be clinical. I like the medical side. So it's kind of where I fell in love with it.
My cousin went to Duquesne.
Really?
I don't remember when he graduated, but he played football for them and his career ended because somebody took a cheap shot at him after he scored as a receiver and ruptured his foot.
No kidding. Yeah. You know what? I kind of remember talking to you about this because we couldn't figure out what year it was. Do you know what year it is? No.
Nah, I still don't remember the year. But Conrad Carter, look him up.
All right. So we have this conversation. Yeah, we're having this same conversation. We haven't gone any further. Exactly. Yeah, no, that's funny. So, I'm trying to think of like Duquesne's sub or the 1AA, so they're not really pumping out anyone serious. But I think like Lee Bodden was probably their most relevant NFL player that came out of there. They've been pretty good the past couple of years, but it was a small school in Pittsburgh. I mean, Pittsburgh's great. I don't know if you guys met Pittsburgh, but talk about like, and I know some, you guys are Philly fans, so you don't love Pittsburgh, but.
No, he's a Philly fan. He's a Philly fan.
All right.
Don't affiliate me with that. Right. No.
Dallas. All right. Yeah. Well, I guess that's NFC. So yeah. Sorry, Alistair. Pittsburgh's great, man. Good sports town. They love their teams. And I loved it there. It has like this blue collar reputation, but it really turned into like a up and coming cultural city with like the strip district with all these different restaurants and bars and stuff. So it's changed dramatically. You can say that about any city, really. You can say that about Brooklyn right now. Alistair, have you been back to Brooklyn at all recently?
I have. And it's actually really, really different. Seeing
weird.
Just like in the short span since I've been gone, it's only been like 4 years. But question, how did you end up at LIU? Because that's where our paths cross in terms of you being a grad assistant.
Yeah, so that's where I went straight from Duquesne to LIU Brooklyn. I wanted to do for after athletic training, you have your 4 years there, you sit for your boards, you get licensed as an athletic trainer. A lot of people end up going on to school. So you can go to PT school, you can go to PA school. I wanted to stay in the athletic training field. So I did a master's and I was a GA. So how it worked out at LIU is that I worked for the school as an athletic trainer. And in this situation, I worked for the track team, and that's where I met Alistair. And then I also went to school and got my master's at the same time. So it was a two year gig. You were there both years, right, Alistair? I think I only did track and field 1 year, which is awesome.
You got a ring with us, and you got a ring with baseball.
I got a ring. You know what I thought about before I came on? What was that dance challenge we did on Facebook? Remember we did that dance challenge? What was it? You remember which one that was?
I think it was Bet You Can't Do Like Me or something like that.
Yeah,
or,
that was even better than the ring. That gave me a lot of the cred, I think. Cause that was early on. So I got tagged in this challenge. It was like, but you can't do it like me. And I actually
fucked it up.
No, I fucked it up, but I did it. It was terrible.
No, was I meant fun. Like fucked it up in a good way, but like, you was killing it.
I definitely didn't fuck it up in a good way, but, it was fun. We had a good time with it. I remember posting it at night and the next day we had a meet and it was so funny, the reaction, but. So I did that. I got the ring. And then from there, it's a 2 year program, graduate with my master's. And it's a good gig because you get 2 years of actual clinical experience at the same time. So, it was awesome for me, met some awesome people. Downtown Brooklyn was amazing. I still live down over there. I didn't want to move away from there. Yeah, still there now to this day. And then from there, I went on to my role now.
Cool, cool.
Damn. Okay, so we'll, let me ask you this. I guess between your time at Duquesne and your time at LIU, what were I guess some of the challenges you faced? I guess going through like your athletic training, I guess preparation, because I know you have to learn like all about like the body and like the different parts of the body and things like that. So,
yeah, it was. I mean, the whole program itself was really challenging. Frankly, like I'm not one of those people who looks back on college and is like, damn, man, I wish I could go back. That's not really what I got out of it. I mean, I met some good people. Yeah, but it shouldn't be, right? Like, that's not the point of it. I met some good people. I'm still really close with my roommates. There was four of us total. All of us were athletic training majors. So when we talk about challenges, it was probably the program itself. And just staying on top of academics while also balancing, like we had to do, part of the curriculum is like you do 1200, I think it's at least 1200. You're doing closer to 1500 clinical hours. So you're pretty much working as a trainer and going to school full time. So it's a lot of balance and time management stuff. But, you know, I think coming out of there, you have a skill, whether you stay as an athletic trainer or going to something else, your time management, ends up being impeccable. But I, you know, the challenges were definitely the actual academic side of it, managing, school, clinical hours, and also somewhat of a social life. But you know, I was fortunate, like I said, to have the three roommates that were also athletic trainers. So
when you were traveling with us, was that clinical hours?
That was different. So when I was traveling with you guys, once I had my 4 years at Duquesne, I had already graduated. I passed my boards and I was licensed. So I was a full-time athletic trainer. In undergrad, before I got that, you can't do that by yourself. You have to be supervised. So you pretty much, but you do a lot of the same stuff, Alistair. So it's like pretty much I did the same thing I did with you guys, but I was supervised. And I had a full semester of schooling, whereas with you guys, I only had three classes. So it was 9 credits. So it wasn't as heavy and as intense in the master's program as it was undergrad. And by the time you get to your master's, a lot of the stuff you've learned already, you've applied it, and it's kind of secondhand nature to you. But you know, in undergrad, there's a challenge while you're still learning the stuff and trying to apply it, and also, you know, being attentive and being at the clinical hour. So, you know, there's some differences. There's a ton of similarities, but I think that was probably the biggest challenge. And you know, like I said, I had good roommates that were with me. I wasn't coming home on like Friday nights and having these guys party and stuff. They were probably studying and hitting the books the same as I was. So that was probably what set me up well. I think is picking the right people to be around, and probably a good life lesson overall, right? Surround yourself with good people that help you get to your goal, you know? You guys like how I twisted that into that? It's like a
No, that was nice. That was nice. That was nice. That was real smooth. Okay. Well, the big question that I have, and I'm not sure if you can answer this because I don't want it to fall under like medical negligence, but have you ever like misdiagnosed an injury before?
Oh yeah. All the time. That's part of it, right? Especially when I left, so I went through Duquesne to LIU, right? You go from being supervised to pretty much like, hey, here's your team. So I was there when I got to LIU, they're like, hey, you're a track, right? And Alice, you remember, it was just kind of Chris and I, but there were so many of you guys. It was like, mm-hmm. Well, it was probably 50 people.
Yep.
So more or less, it was just Chris Manzano and I tackling it together. And it's the first time where like no one's peeping over your shoulder. No one's like telling you what to do. So you misdiagnose things, but in the way I always treat it was, you know, rare is rare. So if I thought something was truly bad, I would refer out and just to make sure that it wasn't, because you can always refer to a physician or go get imaging just to make sure that it's not that. You know, you do your differential diagnosis, so you make sure that it's something, the worst case scenario, you want to rule that out first. And then from there you work down and you work your way to what it possibly could be. So as long as you're not missing the major diagnoses that are life threatening, which honestly, you don't incur a lot because you do preseason physicals to rule that stuff out. As long as you're not mm-hmm. messing with that, you know, it happens and it's normal and you work through it and you keep the lines of communication open with athletes and be honest and transparent. And it's not really a big deal, but it certainly happens. I wouldn't say it happens a ton, but it certainly happens.
Right. Well, and I figure as much, because I mean, not to say it's it's science, but it's not an exact science. Like, right. You know what I mean? Especially if you're like, you know, feeling somebody's ankle to be like, oh yeah, it's like this is fractured. You know what I mean? Like you said, you need like that confirmation from like an actual machine that like takes pictures of your bones to be like, okay, yeah, like this is definitely a fracture. You know what I mean? So I would definitely anticipate it, but you definitely were like a lot more calm about that than I had it drummed up bigger in my head.
Well, so there's a flip side to it too, right? So like I think the human element of it is so important because you might misdiagnose something, right? But on the other hand, you might take an image of something, and this is big in the medical world. Like I might take an image of, you know, one of your guys' knees right now, and it may show some like pretty like good aging or some you're lacking tissue or you got bone on bone. But you may not feel that. You may feel fine, right? So I think a lot of times, you know, when an athlete comes in and says, oh, like my hamstring hurts or my knee hurts, and we just say, oh, all right, let's get an MRI. Like probably good. There's a good chance, especially for athletes, you're going to find something, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the pain. So I think there's a good human element in working with the patient and not necessarily like the image that we tend to quickly kind of get and assess out. So, you know, there's value in being wrong, right? Because you're working through a differential diagnosis, which means you're just ruling out what it could be, what it couldn't be. And that's natural. Some injuries present much more simpler than others. Some don't. But as long as you're managing the pain, the managing the symptoms, and you're progressing, that's really the goal, right? At the end of the day, the label on the injury is just the name on it. As long as you're hitting certain benchmarks and you're proving, that's the important part. So. I know, so it kind of it's like I just twisted a little bit, but yeah, I mean that's very common too. When you get an image, especially you can take an image of a lot of people's backs, you probably have some kind of disc issues, but you may not have any pain. You know, and then someone sees that, and then they all of a sudden do have pain because there's some psychological piece to it too. So you know, the imaging is good. The imaging is good to confirm. Go ahead.
Following that up is, can someone actually be injury prone? Because my entire life, I've heard someone, oh, Carson Wentz, for example, how it's like always a freak incident where it's like, oh, his finger, oh, his back, oh, his knee, and he's always hurt. So can someone actually be injury prone?
I don't, that's a good question. I haven't thought about, I think there's a truth to that in the sense that you may be injury prone for like soft tissue injuries. I don't think you're injury prone for like breaking a thumb, hurting your shoulder. Like, you know, obviously the whole body's connected and there's a whole chain, but there are just some things where it's a freak accident, right? Especially when you mix in contact. So anytime you have contact, that's unpredictable. But if you're always having like non-contacted like injuries, like soft tissue or hamstring or knee or quad, or even upper body soft tissue, there's probably some element to that that's you're actually injury prone, or and maybe more in the medical term, like you're not doing enough preventative injury work, or a full body assessment kind of thing before you're getting out there. But to say someone's injury prone because like you broke a bone here and there and you've had some bad luck with contact injuries, I wouldn't say that. At least that's my personal feeling on it. But if you have a multiple soft tissue stuff, there's probably some issues there underlying, whether it's, you know, mobility, strength, flexibility, that kind of thing. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, that's my two cents, but.
All right, something that I gotta ask. What's the difference between like a sprain or like a bruise? Or are they the same thing?
All right. So you usually the common mix up is like sprain and strain, right? So I'll clear that one first. So strain is all muscle. You only strain a muscle, right? So you strain a hamstring, you strain a quad, strain a calf. The sprain is usually within the joint, so you can sprain a ligament, right? So you just have an ACL sprain or MCL sprain. And that means the ligament is actually stretched and you actually have some laxity and it's somewhat sprained. The bruise is, in the medical community, you just call it like a contusion. There's actual bleeding. And it's usually from like an acute traumatic experience, like whether you get hit, and I'm talking more like, you know, this is for muscular bruising or muscle hematomas. There is some bleeding and it's usually from getting hit. You can have like a bone bruise too. Like, right. So if you're thinking like, if it's hard to do it with just showing the video, but if your knee, right. So if you have your lower half of your leg and then your femur, right. There's some times where there's contact, or if you twist or turn the wrong way, you can collide those bones in your knee and have a bone bruise, which is very painful and sometimes hard to accurately diagnose. So that's an option. Those are probably the two common types of misconceptions and bruises and sprains. But generally, sprain is just speaking on ligament, and bruise is speaking to either the muscle or like the bones and the joint that are colliding and have caused some kind of trauma.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the
Does that help? Did that answer that one?
No, that definitely helps.
You guys are keeping me sharp here. This is good.
What we're doing?
Yeah, no, because I always run into like silly situations where I end up getting hurt, like just playing pickup sports or whatever, and then I'm always just like, man, I don't know what's wrong. Oh well,
you go on WebMD and it's like, you probably got to get. Like,
well, I stopped doing that because like, yeah, there's been like a whole bunch of wild stuff.
That's been
like,
wild, right, man.
And I'm just like, there's no way that this is what's happening to me because I bumped my knee, like. It just doesn't make sense. But
last football season, I think Patrick Mahomes dislocated his kneecap. I think
that's
the diagnosis they said. How was he able to come back so fast? And is it just because he's superhuman, or is it because like the way they popped it back in, he was just like, all right, we can keep going?
No, I was actually surprised by that. A lot of times when you dislocate a joint, generally there's going to be laxity, right? Because when I say laxity, it means it's loose pretty much. So a lot of times you have to have surgery to tighten that up. And I'm still not convinced that he doesn't. I mean, clearly he doesn't, but I was surprised by that. And it could just be just the severity of how far it came out or how long it was out. Mm. So he dislocated his patella, which is obviously that little circular bone that runs along your knee. And that's connected by your two of the tendons that are the quad tendon, obviously, in the patella. So if that dislocates, generally you have some stretching or some tearing of that. So I was surprised. Again, there's obviously a lot that goes into it.
Came back to win a Super Bowl. So I was like,
oh. Yeah. And he's obviously, he's younger, he's in great shape, and that helps a lot too. But also the strengthening of that quad muscle is key. So the stronger your quad muscle is, the more stable that joint and that ligament is going to be on the patella. So that's important too. So, I mean, there was obviously a good amount of risk involved in that. And I kind of forgot about it until you asked, but yeah, he's done fine. I don't think he's had any kind of procedure since. So, cause there was somebody else who did that and was out, and I now it's blanking me and I forget who it was. I don't even know if it was in football, but someone else had that same injury and was out. They had to have a procedure to tighten up that ligament. So that's interesting, but yeah. He is superhuman. That's for damn sure.
No, yeah, that's kind of wild. But look at Patrick Mahomes. Like, he literally like can drop back 20 yards and then throw the ball like almost 70. So it's just like he's probably superhuman.
You ever wonder like how athletes like that are kind of like missed in the scouting process? Like how is he not? Like, there's guys like him. I was just thinking about this the other day too. Like, guys like him. Who else? I mean, even like in basketball.
Even someone just like Brendan.
I was watching Steph Curry. I was watching Steph Curry went 7th overall. Like guys that are like the faces of these sports are. It's crazy. It's interesting. It's funny you said that. Yeah, because where did Mahomes go? Like late first.
He went
24.
Yeah, it was like mid to late first.
Because they always the quarterbacks that go before that went before him, like Baker, I think, and Darnold.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter who went before him because they ain't better than him right now. So it's like,
But I mean, do we think Patrick Mahomes would have been as good as he is if he would end up as a Jet? You think
so? Yes.
Okay. I don't know.
He wouldn't want a Super Bowl.
He wouldn't win a Super Bowl this fast, but he would. Yeah. Come on, Bryce.
I mean, I'm just saying there's other factors that contributed to it too. I mean, he ended up in the perfect situation. Andy Reid Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, like, come on, man. Like, it's a really good situation to be in
as far as you can. I'm pretty sure.
I'm just saying it's a really good situation to be in as a young quarterback. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's, it's probably the best situation.
His non-dominant hand. I'm pretty sure he would figure it out.
Okay. Okay. All right.
I would argue I'll take the middle side here. Like, I would argue he'd probably be obviously as talented. His record probably wouldn't resemble what it resembles. I mean, he's just a freak athlete.
Because I don't think they would run any of the same offenses that they run now. Oh, no. Nowhere close to that. So I feel like it'd be a little different. But nonetheless, he could still throw the ball like the whole field. So it doesn't really matter. But
getting back to the journey of you, Dan, because reason why I reached out to you is because you just happened to pop up with the Larry O'Brien trophy. So could you just tell us how you got your hands on that trophy?
That's funny. All right. So I'm going to start way back. So I'm going to start. So we kind of, the last I talked about myself, I got this role I'm in now. So I'll tell you how I got here. And we'll finish with Larry, my uncle Larry. So we did, I went from LAU Brooklyn straight to NBPA. And NBPA, like I said, is a union for the NBA players. So we represent the players. I work for the players. Our leadership team, our president's Chris Paul. Andre Iguodala is on our committee. Carmelo Anthony was, Jaylen Brown, Malcolm Brogdon. There's a lot of guys there. So we work directly for them on things like negotiating CBA, like legal issues, communications, brand comms, licensing, all this stuff. And I work on the medical side. So if there's medical issues, I help out with there. I help out with them there. So I came on in this role as a on-site medical and kind of a, honestly, some basketball ops. We have a facility in Midtown, Midtown Manhattan, that is, that these guys work out of in the off season and teams practice in and during season. So when I came on, this facility was fairly new. So a lot of it was getting to know the guys, letting them know about the space that was built out the year prior, getting them to come work out. And from there, I built some good relationships with guys and really kind of progressed in my role thanks to, you know, my boss who's been supportive and everything. So now it's mostly full-time medical. I still work out of the facility. I still help out there, but a lot of my efforts are focused on medical. And when this COVID thing hit last year, or I guess, I mean, it's this year. Shit, it feels like last year, but it was this year. when that hit this year, I think, it's funny because you're asking me all like this stuff about injuries. I haven't thought about injuries in so long because most of it's been COVID related. But
yeah,
when COVID hit in January, we kind of focused our efforts there. And we've been talking about this since. And we obviously shut down in March. And there was like this month, like stall period, like, what do we do? We're waiting for the league to talk to us. And then when they decided on this bubble, it was like all hands on deck, we're going to go do this. We have to make the protocol. So, my role there was, you know, just for like a 10,000 foot view, like the NBA, which is the business, they provide these protocols that they think would work, and they want to get the players sign off. So they come to us. We review them all. We go through them. We give them our recommendations, our feedback, what will work, what won't, what's non-starter. So we work together collaboratively on these protocols. We came together with this bubble idea. And I actually ended up going down to it. So I went down in, I think it was July? Went down in July. And spent 3 months there. And once the bubble started, frankly, it was kind of I wouldn't say it ran itself, but our role as a union was kind of a lot less than it was before, because mostly guys were there. So a lot of our role was just being there, making sure things were running out smoothly and keeping the communication lines open with the NBA. And obviously we had our shutdown for the social justice thing. So that was kind of something that was hands-on as well. And really happy that our leadership team was there for that, because that was important too, just to kind of weigh the pros and cons of how we were going to proceed there, how the players are going to proceed. And then additionally, we started a school there for the players' kids. So that, when people ask like what I did down there, cause it did get, it kind of ran itself for a little while. But one of my other jobs there was to kind of manage this school. So, we had like 7 or 8 kids that were there, in the bubble.
Who has the worst behaved kids?
Good question. I'm not gonna name any names. There's some, but frankly, a lot of them are great. But some of them are young, right? But these kids are like, these kids are huge. These kids are massive. Like, these are 1 or 2 year olds walking around, and they like tower over like a staff's 3 year old. It's so funny. Most of them are pretty good for the most part. Yeah. So that was part of the gig there. And then, so I ended up staying there through the end, cause school went through the end. We had some teams that had kids, the teams that were in the finals had a couple kids there. So school went all the way through. And then, at the end of the bubble, we were kind of like rooting for the Lakers so we could get out of there. But I was kind of rooting for the Heat. You know, I thought both teams would play well. I always like to see the underdog kind of win. So I'm glad it got to 6 games, but after that, LeBron was like, "Nah, we're out of here." So,
taking this.
They won game 6 in commanding fashion. And then afterwards, we, you know, we, how did we end up? They had a celebration. So in the bubble, there was, towards the end, it got down to one major hotel. And it was really like, if you envision like a college campus, there's just one big tower of hotel rooms that all the team stayed in. And then myself and league staff. And then around, you have like, I mean, there's so many people in this bubble. Around, you have like these other breakoff branches. So you have like ESPN, media, Turner, all these different companies that are out there, and also some league staff. And in the middle, so the for the duration in the middle, there was like this one restaurant called Three Bridges. And it was actually because there was three bridges that led to it. It was in the middle of like this lake on this campus. So that was kind of like the hangout spots where people went at night to drink or to eat. And for the final, for the celebration, they closed it off. They had, you know, the Lakers colors. They had all the champagne. They had all the cigars, everything kind of you would at a normal celebration, minus the extracurriculars, I'd imagine. But anyway, it was a PG championship celebration. So we had gone over to say congratulations, and we ended up staying there. When I say we, it was myself and some of the union staff that were there with me, that I was there with, I guess, more or less. But we had gone over to say congrats, and, you know, one drink turned into a couple, and we ended up staying there for like 2 or 3 hours, and the Larry O'Brien trophy was there. So we're like, all right, well, we might as well get a picture.
Yeah, definitely.
It was pretty casual. I wish there was like a crazy star. It was more just sitting on a table, walked over to it, and took a couple pictures. We happen to have our photographer with us, so it came out as like high resolution, like not some crappy iPhone. So it was great. So that's how I ended up with the Larry O'Brien trophy. And then honestly, the worst part, I say worst and it's relative, but the worst part is like trying to find, I posted on IG just for people that aren't aware, I posted on IG, but waited 2 or 3 weeks because I'm like, I can't really post this. I don't have like a caption. I don't want it to be too much of a flex. Like, I didn't want to be that guy. So that was the hardest part.
You just got to throw up the trophy emoji.
I forget what I ended up doing, but. Oh no! So the trophy, the big thing, NBA had a partnership with Louis Vuitton.
With the crazy case, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I played it cool. I was like, I'm waiting to get my suitcase back from the Lakers, but that was it.
That's what's up. So I gotta ask though. One of the things early on we saw in the bubble was that the food was shit. It was like, it was terrible. Like, did you experience that initially as well? Or was it just like the Lakers were getting really good meals and everybody else was getting terrible meals? Or how did that work out?
So when you first entered the bubble, you had to be in your room. There was a hard quarantine for the players for 2 days. So you couldn't leave your room for 2 days. So during that 2 days is obviously when the social media blew up on the food, because they were literally delivering meals, right? And there can't be like, you can't have a person to person. So they had to put it in like these kind of look like school cafeteria containers, drop it off at your door, and then you pick it up and eat there. So, I mean, those 2 days, the food wasn't great. And remember, players only had 2 days, but staff, like I did 4 days, and then most people actually did seven, right? So seven days in a hotel, it was crazy. I had 4 days. It was a long time. You can't leave. So the 2 days, whatever your quarantine period was, the food wasn't great. It got old pretty quick. But once you got out of the room and you could go to the different places on campus, you could order food from select vendors that delivered. It was fine. I mean, after 3 months, it all kind of tasted, I could eat, you know, like I could eat steak dinners for 3 months and then be sick of it. So towards the end, you kind of get sick of it because it was the same food, but I mean, all in all, it was fine. I think if you wanted something different, you could order something, you go to the restaurant, you could, there was plenty of options. So I think it was just for that first week or so where like people were seeing like the pictures of it. It wasn't like aesthetically pleasing, that's for sure. And I'm sure it wasn't what the guys were used to. So
the first couple of days, like,
yeah, it was, but I mean, after that, you kind of, there wasn't much talk about the food. Right. And that's probably because, it ended up being pretty good and teams kind of figured out a routine, and they were even allowed to bring some nutritionists and chefs down outside the bubble and deliver food in. So it ended up being fine. But I mean, there was just so many things logistically to think about. And I credit the NBA on that, because there's just like everything from like a laundry to food, to deliveries, to testing. It's just an absolute nightmare. So I'm sure like, you know, the first 2 days of food was something there was high on their radar. So But
it sounds like the NBA covered just about everything in terms of getting people down there. Now, the only thing that I really want to know is if they had covered was what was up with the ladies. So were they flying in ladies too? Or was that just like a non-existent thing? I feel like, man, somebody had to sneak somebody into the bubble, man. You know, if anybody, you know, maybe Kyle Kuzma, I don't know, but somebody.
Well, so guys, after when the playoffs started, guys could bring guests. So players were allowed to, but that you couldn't for the first, like, I want to say it was the first, I should know this, but I don't. The first month and a half, no guests, just players, teams, and the league staff. Once they got rid of like the teams that made the playoffs, they were allowed to bring, they wanted to make it a smaller cohort. So they brought in just to get like the teams that were advancing past the first round, you could bring in family members.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys brought girlfriends, and Kuzma brought his girlfriend. Obviously wives and kids could come. So that's where you start to, that's where you could see like, you know, the coupley pictures and that kind of thing. But prior to that, I mean, there was nothing, man. There was
nothing
there. And there wasn't any feasible way that anyone could have snuck in there. I swear it was like, it's hard to describe it, but it would have never worked.
Yeah, from watching JaVale McGee's vlog with Kayla, like, I kind of saw like the restaurant you're talking about, because I saw J.R. Smith there. He was kind of zooted, I'm not gonna lie. I don't know if he had like a little corner, but I'm snitching on you, JR.
There was a lot. We had some complaints from Disney on the marijuana.
That was I believe it. I mean, you locked down, you know. What else those guys gonna get into? But I mean, shit, you guys were putting hella money in Disney's pocket, so it wasn't like they could really complain. I mean, they could, but.
So what was there to do outside of work though, Dan?
So there was obviously the fishing. You guys saw the fishing. So the fishing was big. It's funny. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of pickleball. You ever heard of pickleball?
Nope.
Pickleball is like this. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. It's like this old white people like life size like version of ping pong. So like it's actually fun. It's like literally think of ping pong on like a smaller tennis court. It's apparently it's like a big thing now. So anyway, the referees, like being the guys that they are, kind of like middle-aged guys, like a couple of them are big on this pickleball sport. And I know of it because my mom actually has played before. So I've heard of it. And we get down there and like, there's like court set up. There's like people that are going hard, and they're going hard at like 11, 12 PM at like 12 AM, but like 1 PM at night. It's like, they got like under the lights. It's wild. So a lot of recreational activities, so like pickleball was big. Golf, they had a couple golf courses set up. So a ton of guys golfed, a ton of the coaches golfed. I golfed a few times when I was out there. Otherwise, there was a lot of like downtime. So guys were in their rooms a lot. The pools were big, like especially early on, you know, when it wasn't quite playoffs yet. A lot of outdoor mingling at the pools, depending on which hotel you're at. Early on, there was two different hotels. One hotel was the teams that were mostly playoff teams. They did it based on seeding. So the higher seeds were at one hotel. The lower seeds were at the other. The lower seeded hotel was much more of a day party. We're going to drink some beers. We're going to play some pool volleyball. And I'm not surprised. They had a great time. So that was the pool to
be at.
That's
why they didn't make the playoffs.
Man, they knew what they were there for. And that's they're to play a couple games and get out. So... So one hotel was way more fun than the other. But I mean, it was kind of the most we made. It was a lot of team bonding, a lot of like, there's two or three restaurants you go to with team dinners, a lot of just drinking wine, hanging out. So I mean, it definitely got stagnant at times. But again, like I'm one of those guys that can hang out in my room, and you know, towards the end of the bubble, we had football on Sundays, so I was just glued to watching football, hanging out. So. It wasn't as bad, especially I don't have kids or family, so I can't talk. I mean, if I had kids or family, we'd be having a much different conversation now, but
definitely,
you know, it was okay. And I understand why their reluctancy to do it again. I think players were kind of sick of it. And, you know, it is like, you know, not, all joking aside, like, you know, as the union, right, our goal is to stick up for the players and what they want. So when this whole bubble thing came up, you know, one of the words that we threw around was like incarceration, right? And like, in your head, you're like, ah, like they're at like a nice hotel in a Disney, resort. Like,
right.
Yeah, like incarcerated seems a bit much. And when you're down there for like that long, it kind of does. I've never been incarcerated, but it kind of does give you that sense, like, I can't leave here without like consequences. And like, you know, there's only certain things you could do. So I get that. And I'm glad we push for certain things like guests and family and these extracurricular activities so that, you know, there was stuff to keep your mind off it. And certainly guys that had mental health issues or anyone that had mental health issues or experienced them while they were down there, there was resources for them because that was a serious thing. And, you know, if you didn't have anyone to cope with, there was a lot of stress, whether it be the social justice stuff, whether it be just the burden of like playoff pressure or underperforming. Like Paul George had a nice piece on that after one of the games, just how stressed he was and he wasn't feeling like himself. So it was a real thing. And you know, I guess you'd have to go through it to realize it, but I'm glad I had that experience because it gave me a different perspective on how these guys kind of feel in the day to day and something that it's probably as close as I'll ever be to an NBA playoff atmosphere or routine, but you kind of get the sense like, you know, after the game that you just go back to your hotel room. There's no family, there's no kids. It does get sad after a while. So I get it.
Damn. You can literally drop 50 and then have to sit in your room alone.
Dude, yeah, that was literally it. Or the joke sucks. Was like you dropped 50 and the guy that dropped 50 on you was like in the pool next to you an hour later. It's like, damn, like I can't escape this shit.
Right.
There was no escape, right? It was just you were there the whole time. So
yeah, what I was gonna say is, but I mean, it sounds like even from the beginning, the setup and everything that was put in place for the NBA is probably like the most genius way to go about having sports taking place during COVID. Because I mean, as you guys all know, like you see with like the NFL. Like every week it's like there's a COVID case, they're shutting down a facility. And it's just almost to the point of like, okay, like obviously you guys like just don't really, it's not that big of a deal or you don't care. I'm even to the point where I feel like the NFL is like not even all the way truthful about some of like the people who have some of the cases or who have like the actual like COVID disease. And they kind of like let things kind of slide depending on like the way a test looks or whatever. So kudos to the NBA and the Players Association for putting together a great product. I know that's been said before by other people, but yeah, definitely. I feel like everyone should have followed that model if possible. But yeah, I don't think what you guys did is going to be repeatable by anybody else.
Yeah, it's hard. It's funny because we had that. It worked so well, and it was successful by most measures. And now literally as we speak, we had calls today and all weekend, but we're talking about next season, and there's no bubble talk at the moment. So it's like, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing as like the NFL and expecting different results. But you know, at the end of the day, it's just a lot to ask of a lot of people. It's a lot of money, and the NBA. Arguably has it the easiest because it's the less amount of people, right? Try to think about doing that with an NFL team or NFL league. Yes, so it really is.
Like, it's 53 guys on every roster, not including, you know, all the staff and the coaches and refs and line judges. You know, it's so many people. So it definitely is way harder. And that's why I feel like they kind of have like a fucking attitude about it. Kind of, it's just kind of like, yeah, well, we got enough bodies where like if somebody gets sick, like we can always just like. Somebody always wants to play football, right? So
yeah, and baseball really made it easy on everybody because they had like two or three teams that had like 20 plus guys. So everyone's like, oh, like it was like, oh, and then
oh wait,
like,
they're back now. That's okay.
They're like they're healthy. So like the threshold for this virus has gone so high that it's like, all right, a couple cases here and there, like not a big deal. But you know, if you had a couple of cases in the bubble, would be a huge deal. And that's why I think you know, even with these leagues, and we'll run into the same issue. I guarantee it. You know, come when we start our season. Just the compliance, like everyone starts out compliant, like yeah, we're gonna do this. After like 3 or 4 weeks,
like it's lax.
Yeah, like I'm not doing this. Like you get comfortable, you get lax, and it happened in the bubble. But frankly, in the bubble, you're in a bubble, so it's okay. It wasn't okay, but it was a little more tolerable. When you're out in the real world, when there's people around you, I mean, that's when you get into trouble. And it's hard to blame some of these athletes, man. Like it's just exhausting. But and not just athletes, the staff and stuff. So it takes a real team effort and you got to really collaborate and everyone's got to do their part. And all it takes is one person to not, and then you're in deep shit. So I expect we'll run into that issue. And I know the players will be good about it, but you know, even ourselves, we have to be really on top of it and it's going to be tough, but you know, that's the problem you run into when you're not in the bubble. And what we'll probably run into at some point this year too.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that we get it figured out, because I personally, and I don't know what it's like, because are you in New York right now?
Yes, or, sir.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know what it's like right now, but I feel like it's almost to the point of where everything's kind of like back to, you know, normal. Everyone's just wearing masks for the most part, at least here. Like I always say, the further south you go, the less masks you see, or the further Midwest you go, like the less masks you see, because people don't, for whatever reason, don't want to wear masks. I just feel like, yeah, I feel like we're in a place where it's like you said, the threshold for people's tolerance for COVID is kind of just like, all right, well, I mean, it's whatever, you know,
I'm over it. I'm tired of this mask.
We're dealing with it, but it's almost kind of like, I don't know if we can really have that attitude about it. Cause
we shouldn't,
I mean, the way things are trending right now, it's
our cases are skyrocketing.
Right.
Especially in the Midwest and the South. It's not a coincidence.
Right. Exactly. Like prime example, we had friends who just went to Texas and they were literally, people who are in the club with like no mask, like literally people were in there smoking hookah together. Like, like it's a regular, like it's like, it's like 2019.
Yeah, I was looking at this like story, it's 2019. Like, whoa, I don't even see a mask in the little section.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like realistically though, that's how it is. And I mean, I'll be honest. Like I went to like very early in the summer, I went to a pool party where it was like, I had no idea what I got myself into, but it was like a mansion pool party and it was like tons of people. And I'm literally in there like with my mask on. I'm just like, damn, I shouldn't have came. Like, I shouldn't have went. I made a mistake.
I got to hang out with you, Mark, because how do you just end up at a mansion pool party? I didn't realize it.
I realized it when I got there. I was just like, Oh, okay. Like, this is what it is. They're like, I was told it was a pool party. So I'm like, cool. You wear my trunks. I ain't going to get in the water, but you know, I'm going to wear my trunks. You know,
you got a little divey, like your scuba dive thing. You show up there.
I was ready. And then after a while, I was just like, yeah, this was a terrible idea. So, I mean, to a certain extent, I'm just like, man, how bad do we really feel the need to like want to go out? But I mean, I guess that's a part of us living our normal lives.
People really want to go out. Some people, just like Dan was talking about, like the whole incarceration feeling. It's like, even if it's a paradise, quote unquote, if you're stuck somewhere, eventually you're just like, yo, I'm going to look crazy. I got to get out.
No, it's true. And it's true.
This is a little wear mask PSA. So we actually had, I mean, the whole thing about the bubble is there was no positive cases, which is actually false. There was no positive cases on players, but there were some vendors that had positive tests, and there was no spread because people wore masks, right? Like there was vendors that were pretty, you know, in close contact with people, but they wore masks, they were socially distanced, so there wasn't any reason to, or there wasn't any cause for infection or spread. So it actually works, and you see it firsthand. And then it's crazy to think like people still ain't wearing these masks. Like why? It's just, you can do your normal life. I mean, there's obviously some things you got to give up, but for the most part, as long as you follow like two concrete rules and you're safe about it, like you can do most of the stuff that you want to do. Maybe not, you know, smoke hookah in the club and stuff like that, or pass drinks around, but who wants to do that anyway? I mean, that's, Now it's funny to think, now you think back, you're like, I can't believe I shared a drink with that person or something like that. It's like,
I can't believe I shared a bottle with, yeah, no.
Yeah, you're like,
you want some of my water? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to air sip it up with no problem.
A year ago.
But
no, I mean, like, you know, it's just like little things. I think I just think a lot of people have been pretty ignorant and not wanting to make change to this. And here we are. And we've also politicized this, obviously, because why wouldn't we? We're Americans. So we had to politicize this virus. And here we are. So, you know, I'm hoping this second wave doesn't hit us too bad. But frankly, I don't think the first wave ever really went away. So I guess this is just the continuation of this virus.
Just a continuation of it. Yep.
We'll see. Yeah. I mean, New York's doing well. From what I'm saying, I think they're ticking up a little bit. For the most part, they actually plateaued, which is great. But I think a lot of people actually just left the city, so that helps. But
no, that makes sense. But yeah, man, I feel like, I just hope we find a way to figure it out. And I hope everyone just, if you have a, wear a mask. That's it. That's my PSA. That's my PSA for today. Wear a mask if you're out and about. Yeah, man. And just, I don't know, man. Hookah's not that great anyways, guys. So, you know, it's okay. It's not that great though. But Dan, before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to, you know, leave the folks with, or that anybody you want to shout out?
Man, all right, that put me on the spot here. Not really.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Not really. Not really. No, I mean, this is good. I'm glad we worked this out, and you guys have been great. What's generally the theme? Let me ask you guys a couple questions. What's generally the theme of the podcast, and where are you guys trying to go with it, and how long you've been doing it? Give me some info on that.
Oh yeah. You don't usually get asked questions at the end.
Putting you guys on the spot. Yeah.
For us, it's going on 2 years. We've just been building this platform, trying to dig people up in our area, or just people that we know that have done something really cool. Mm-hmm. And that's why we teamed up A and B, and we just have conversations with people, because it's pretty that simple. And I feel like not everyone has the ability to just talk with each other, because they don't sit down and they don't get the opportunity to hear about the NBA bubble or what it's like to be an athletic trainer or celebrity chef. But giving people the opportunity with our platform, it's really something cool. And it's an outlet.
Yeah.
I did the podcast Get Some Ass, but I mean, it hasn't really.
How's that going for you, Bryce?
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. Slow and steady wins the race, I guess. So,
one of these days, it'll pay off.
No, I'm lying. But yeah, Alistair pretty much covered it for the most part. I think it was just a way to create a platform to share things that we like, or people that we feel like are doing the damn thing, or doing things that we think are cool, or things that people can relate to, or that can inspire people. We do a lot of promoting of like local artists, or artists that aren't super big in terms of whether it be music or art or baking, whatever it may be. Yeah, we definitely just try to put on for people that we think are good, or people that we like. So, and like Alistair said, it's been we're going close to on 2 years. So we've got like 100 something episodes. We're trying to get more video content out, so that, you know, people can also see us, and as opposed to just hearing us, because I mean, you got to marry the two together, realistically.
You guys are great. You're not doing yourself. That's why you're not getting any ass, dude, because you're not putting your.
That's probably what it is. These girls,
I don't want to listen to this dude. I want to see him. That's
I want to see him. Oh, man. They want to see me in the pink hoodie. Sam,
if I bring anything to this podcast, it's that we're going to get your ass. That's the only thing.
Finally.
No, but
after almost a 2-year journey, Obese comes through and gets me the W.
Damn, it's like that. It's a drought. So no, but in all seriousness, though, I think like one of the silver linings, I'm a big silver lining guy, if you guys couldn't tell, but one of the best parts, I think, of this, and there's no great parts of the pandemic, but the things that I've been picking out is like the virtual connections you made with people. And, I did one podcast a month ago or so, and just people that you've reached out to on Instagram or haven't reached out to before. And it almost seems like Zoom and like FaceTime is now like a normal thing amongst all these calls. So, I think that's been one of my favorite parts about like how this pandemic has kind of sped the technology and like the face-to-face interactions virtually, probably put us like 5 or 10 years like ahead of our time. I mean, this is crazy how much, I think back to like even like work meetings before were all calls. Now it's like weird if you're not on a Zoom. So it's cool to see people kind of interacting virtually. It's cool to see your guys' face and listen to the pod and that kind of thing. And I credit a lot of people kind of taking this time to kind of like reset and take some things seriously that they maybe thought they didn't have time for before, but, you know, resetting and trying to tackle some other things in life that they've maybe put aside and now they have some time for. So this is really cool. So I had a ton of fun.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you, man. We appreciate it. Alistair, awesome. Do you want to leave the people with your stairs to greatness for this week?
Absolutely. This week's stairs to greatness is courtesy of Albert Einstein. Everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree, it's going to spend its whole life believing it's stupid. Think about it, process it, get back to me. You can follow me on Instagram, Stairs to Greatness, follow our podcast page, AMB Podcast. We're always cooking something up. We're always scheming for y'all because we appreciate all the love that you give us. We do everything and we get all our guests because we're trying to entertain, inform, and just be here for y'all. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And my little cheesy line that I like to say, We are the vehicle. You guys are the wheels. We're not going anywhere without you. Thank you.
You don't have to label it as cheesy. Let other people label it as cheesy. Then that way it may actually be cheesy. Because in the time for the time being, we don't know. We don't know what it is right now. We don't know. It's up in the air. yeah, man. As always, I don't usually have anything profound to say. Just pick your spots, hit your shots. You can follow me on social media. On Twitter, it's Young Tamarack, YoungTamarack. On Instagram, it's Kofi Bryce _. Check out some of the visuals that we're putting together. More content coming. Trying to be nonstop content. I'm trying to be the content king. And with that being said, as always, we play music from a local artist. And this week, we're going to play a song that I heard a few weeks ago that I thought was pretty dope. And it's actually Dedication by Nate Bone. Yeah, man, this has been another week of the AMB podcast. Appreciate everybody for listening. Peace.
We out.
Posted on the worth, yeah. Rose from the dirt, sold a rock before a verse, ride before I work, felt like I was cursed, staying high because we hurt, crawl before I walk, my name embedded on my turf, posted on the worth, rose from the dirt, sold a rock before a verse, ride before I work, felt like I was cursed, staying high because we hurt, crawl before I walk, my name embedded on my turf. In the ghetto, we pull strings like Geppetto. Fat, quiet nigga, but I'm dancing with the devil. Put me anywhere and I'm adapting with the rebels. From a place where niggas don't respect the ones who settle. Product of the block, so I write them horror stories. Broke nigga died beefing cause he can't afford it. All the signs that you seen, but you still ignored it. My nigga used to kick in doors till he got deported. Lawyer fees, loyalty before royalty. 2006 on the bricks was a cold to me. I had a gift with no money in my pockets. Broke as shit, trying to sell these rocks for a profit. Options kinda slim, get it poppin' for the men. Most of my niggas in the box now. Corona got you locked down. Used to shoot sticks, but shit, you got a box now. I'm swinging life, I pray to God for a better life. Posted on the worth, yeah. Rose from the dirt, sold a rock before a verse, ride before I work, felt like I was cursed, staying high because we hurt, crawl before I walk, my name embedded on my turf, posted on the worth, rose from the dirt, sold a rock before a verse, ride before I work, felt like I was cursed, staying high because we hurt, crawl before I walk, my name embedded on my turf.